I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. A former Port Authority of New York and New Jersey official who pleaded guilty in the lane closing case took the stand today as the government's star witness. Let's learn more with WHYY's Joe Hernandez, who's been on the case. Good evening, Joe.
Good evening, Dave.
We've been waiting for this all-star, David Wildstein. Tell us about him.
David Wildstein is a former Port Authority official, and he's going to be the government's star witness in this trial. He's pleaded guilty. And Wildstein is expected to say that the plot to close these lanes was masterminded by the two defendants, Bill Baroni, who he reported to at the Port Authority, and Bridget Ann Kelly, who was a deputy chief of staff to Chris Christie. Today, Wildstein said that he was the bad guy, quote, to Baroni's good guy. He said he was at the Port Authority to do essentially Governor Christie's bidding. He referred to the one constituent rule that he and Baroni would talk about, meaning any decision they made at the Port Authority, any move they made, they served one person, and that was Chris Christie.
And let's note that the affiliation between Wildstein and Christie goes way back before either of them were in the political arena.
It goes back to when they were in high school. They were classmates.
Now, have any of the witnesses testified that Governor Christie knew about or ordered the scheme to close the lanes?
Not yet, and that could come this coming week, but not yet. Prosecutors have said in their opening statements that Wildstein and Baroni bragged to Christie about this scheme at a 9/11 memorial ceremony while the lane closures were going on. And so there may be testimony to that effect, but no one has said quite yet Governor Christie ordered the scheme. And it should also be noted that Christie has not been charged with a crime, and he's said that he didn't know about what was going on.
Time for some traffic problems in Fort Lee, and it was the mayor, Mark Sokolich, who was there at the time, and I understand he took the stand this week.
Mark Sokolich is kind of the guy at the center of the trial in a way, because this lane closure scheme was allegedly directed at him. He was the Democratic mayor. He still is the Democratic mayor of Fort Lee, a town of about 38,000 people right across the bridge from New York City. And Sokolich was testifying that ahead of Governor Christie's reelection, Christie's political operatives were trying to court in endorsements from Democratic mayors. They knew that Christie was going to win, but they really wanted the margin to be big. And so they thought, well, let's court Democratic mayors. Let's get their endorsements to show that Christie has bipartisan support. So they gave Sokolich things like tours of Ground Zero. They invited him to lunches with the governor at Drumthwacket, which is the governor's mansion outside of Princeton. They gave him New York Giants tickets. But Sokolich eventually didn't endorse. And so that's when these lane closures happened. He said he woke up on Monday, September 9th, 2013, to the worst gridlock he's ever seen. And later, defense attorneys would ask Sokolich about this, but later Sokolich wrote in a letter to the editor of the New York Star-Ledger, this wasn't politically motivated. Even when he had his suspicions, it was. Defense attorney said, why did you lie? Why did you lie to the public like that? And he said, I was petrified of further retribution. So he had some idea what was going on.
What does this mean, though, now for Chris Christie going forward?
That's still unclear. His poll numbers are down. They're at an all-time low. The latest approval rating from the Eagleton Institute at Rutgers University had 23% of New Jerseyans approving of the job he's doing. The worst it's ever been for him. And there's also been talk of impeachment. There was a story that came out this morning that said some Democrats in the state legislature are trying to figure out exactly what it would take to impeach a governor. They're actively thinking about it, this story said. And the last thing is that Democrats in the legislature were investigating Bridgegate before the trial started. When the trial started, they put that investigation on hold, but they've said that after the trial concludes, they want to pick it back up again. And so that may reveal more about what's going on. You know that Chris Christie is not on trial here, so the legislative investigation could go kind of down different avenues that the trial doesn't.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Dave.
WHYY New Jersey correspondent Joe Hernandez on NewsWorks Tonight. Pennsylvania U.S. Senator Pat Toomey got some big reelection campaign support today. WHYY's Tom McDonnell reports that a former Republican presidential nominee came to the region to rally voters in favor of Toomey.
Vote early and often. I understand that's an old Philadelphia custom. In fact, I understand they even honor the dead so much they let them vote. I don't know if that's true or not.
Senator John McCain started right in about getting out the vote for Pat Toomey and placed tongue firmly in cheek by calling on people to help the incumbent win in any way possible. When he got serious, McCain said Toomey was a workhorse in Washington who is needed to keep a Republican majority in the Senate.
America needs Pat Toomey in the United States Senate, not just the people of Pennsylvania, but the people of this of Arizona and the people of this country.
McCain is running an ad in his home state of Arizona, enforcing the need for a Republican-dominated Congress.
If Hillary Clinton is elected president, Arizona will need a senator who will act as a check, not a rubber stamp, for the White House.
Toomey told the crowd he would be better than Katie McGinty on the issue of terrorism.
You know, one of the things that I have learned in my first term in the Senate is just how serious the threats are to American security. These threats are no longer on distant shores. Some of these threats are right here within our own borders.
McGinty's repeatedly used negative ads saying Toomey is too business friendly and makes decisions that don't benefit families. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
Donald Trump yesterday appeared in Pittsburgh saying that if elected, he'll unleash America's fossil fuel sector. More fracking, more drilling, and fewer regulations. But the oil and gas industry has shown less commitment to Trump than previous Republican candidates. The Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier reports that that's because Trump is a Republican of a different stripe.
At the David L. Lawrence Convention Center in Pittsburgh, Donald J. Trump introduced himself to the crowd of oil and gas executives with a promise.
It's great to be with so many of my friends. Oh, you will like me so much. You will get that business.
The fracking industry has made Pennsylvania the number two natural gas producing state in the U.S., behind Texas. And Trump gave the audience, many of whom took part in the fracking boom here, a campaign promise of fewer environmental rules and more help building pipelines and other big energy projects.
I'm going to lift the restrictions on American energy and allow this wealth to pour into our communities, including right here in the state of Pennsylvania that we love.
The oil and gas industry typically favors the GOP, the party of small government and fewer regulations, but Trump may have some work to do to tie down support from oil and gas. Hillary Clinton is actually raising more campaign donations from the industry than Trump is right now. Jeff Maurer is editor at America's Oil News and Analysis. He says some in the industry are leery of Trump, especially when it comes to his command of policy details. He recently came out in favor of an ethanol policy some refiners oppose. A few hours after Trump's position was posted on his website, the campaign took it down.
They think Trump is speaking in these broad generalities, and then when he does get specific, he'll pull back on it. So it's very hard to gauge, I suppose, what exactly Trump will do going forward.
That's not such a great quality, especially for an industry that craves predictability in its political allies, Maurer says. Still, many in the oil and gas industry view Trump, with all his obvious flaws, as a better choice than Clinton for their industry. Michael Hines works for a West Virginia engineering firm that serves the fracking industry. He was working a booth on the floor of the convention center where Trump spoke.
I do think that his heart is in the right place. I think that he wants to do things that remove the barriers from making our country work better. And I feel like, you know, we're past due. We're overdue for that.
Hines says he doesn't trust Clinton, citing scandals over Benghazi and her questionable use of a private email server. Still, Hines says he wants to see a little more out of Trump.
I'm a Republican. I've voted Republican my whole life. I'm working my way toward Trump. I'm not there yet, but he's got to start acting a little more presidential.
He was heartened by the fact that oil billionaire Harold Hamm was advising Trump on energy issues. Hamm recently had to clear up one of Trump's positions on fracking when Trump told a news reporter he'd be okay with local fracking bans. These bans are vigorously opposed by the oil and gas industry. Hamm later had to say that Trump didn't, quote, understand the issue when he had first answered the question. It's moments like that one that give John Becker pause about voting for Trump.
He's his own worst enemy. I think this might not even be a race if Trump and his team could somehow prevent him from stepping on his own feet all the time.
Becker works for a fracking equipment supplier in Ohio. He thinks Trump picks unnecessary fights, like the time he attacked the family of a soldier killed in Iraq. So who is Becker voting for?
I'm leaning toward Gary Johnson, actually.
Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate. So given the choice between Trump and Clinton, Becker says he will take C, none of the above. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Reed Frazier.
A potential record audience is anticipated for Monday night's first debate between presidential candidates Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. To get a handle on what they'll be listening and watching for, let's turn to Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
I wonder if folks will be tuning in large measure for the spectacle, the gaffe, the gotcha moment.
Well, when we think about debates in the past, we usually remember those types of things. When Dukakis was asked about what he would do if his wife was raped, Ronald Reagan's response when they asked about his age, and he turned it against Walter Mondale, Gerald Ford's famous response that Poland was not under the control of the Soviet Union, and so forth and so on. But I think in this debate, ratings are projected to be high because a lot of people are fascinated by these candidates, the personalities, particularly Donald Trump, who is an outsized, unusual candidate, and probably a lot of people are going to be tuning in just to see what happens.
To what extent does the first debate or the collection of debates make a difference?
You know, that's subject to debate. I've seen scholars who look at it and say, you know, it really doesn't make that much difference. People are pretty locked into voting. You know, Dave, in some places like North Carolina and other states, people are already voting, so it can't make a difference for them. So I think that the jury's out. I would certainly think in this particular year's election, it could make a difference.
You know, I suspect there is in part a recency effect. What is proximate in the news is most on the mind of potential voters. And with that, let's turn to recent events in Tulsa and Charlotte begging the issues of race relations and police interactions.
Confidence in police over the last several years when we've asked this, 29% of black respondents in our survey say they are confident in the police. Twice that, 58% of whites say they are confident in the police. Are blacks treated less well than whites by police in your area? Blacks significantly more likely to say yes to that than are whites. Same thing when we ask about in your community, are there incidents recently where blacks have been treated less well? And we find the same kind of thing.
Let's bring gun control into the measure.
When we ask just recently, who would do the better job on gun policy, Trump actually wins by about 10 points on that. However, when we say which of these two candidates would do the best job in terms of the treatment of minority groups in this country, that is the top issue that Clinton has where she beats Trump. It's huge. 65-30, Americans taken as a group say that she would be better in terms of treating or dealing with minority groups in general.
What's behind the vote?
More than anything else, people come back to us and say, the reason I'm voting for either Clinton or Trump is because I don't like the opponent. And that goes along with all of our data showing that they have record high unfavorable ratings. So it's kind of anti the other person. But for Trump, more of his supporters tell us they're voting for him because of his policies and positions on issues. Whereas for Clinton, they're more likely to say it's because of her experience. Also, for Donald Trump, we have a significant group of people who say we just need a change. Plus, Dave, as is always the case, you know, a number of Americans say they're voting for Clinton because they're Democrats, and a number of people say they're voting for Trump because they're Republican.
Neither Clinton nor Trump are polling anywhere near 50%. There are two third-party candidates, but come Election Day, does precedent indicate that that percentage who will vote for a third-party candidate diminishes?
Typically, it does. I think it is clear that at this point in the campaign, a lot of times people will tell pollsters, yes, I'll vote for Johnson or for Stein, when they are mentioned by the pollster given as an explicit choice. But then when they get closer to the election, they move more to the other candidates. Not always the case. The special instance there that we always refer to is H. Ross Perot, who actually overperformed. He ended up getting 19% of the popular vote in 1992 against Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush. And that was actually higher than our polling and other polling suggested. So sometimes it can work the other way. But everything else being equal, I would think the currently 8 or 9%, for example, saying they're voting for Libertarian candidate Gary Johnson will be more than he will actually get when we tally the votes on November 8th.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight. A crumbling North Philadelphia building that's been vacant for decades will be gutted and turned into apartments for aging veterans. WHYY's Mike and Scott reports.
The four-story brick structure with its broken or missing windows is a well-known eyesore to North Philadelphia residents.
Oh, yes. 40 years this building's been sitting here.
The head of the Philadelphia Housing Authority, Calvin Jeremiah, put it more bluntly.
Let me tell you, that building has been such a thorn in my side.
Jeremiah says he's been getting calls about the structure for years. Residents complained it was being used for drug deals. Inside, it's covered with graffiti. The paint is peeling off the walls. Jeremiah says now the former school will help solve Philadelphia's need for cheap housing.
This development is part of PHA's initiative to create and preserve some 6,000 units of affordable housing in the next 5 years.
The Philadelphia Housing Authority has partnered with a nonprofit called Help USA that specializes in housing for the homeless to turn this old building around. The project will cost more than $13 million. Tom Hammeline, CEO of Help USA, says the future residents of this building will also receive support services.
Making sure that people not only get in housing, but they're able to benefit from the housing, remain stably housed, and move on with their lives.
Disabled Vietnam veteran Albert Eel says the concept of specialized housing for vets makes sense.
Veterans do understand each other. It's hard for a civilian person that don't even know what a foxhole is.
The project is slated to be finished within 14 months. I'm Mike and Scott, WHYY News.
Tomorrow's forecast looks fine for the first Philly Free Streets event. Following positive feedback from pedestrians after temporarily closing major sections of roadways during last year's papal visit, the city's decided to do it again. Let's step outside with Clarina Tolson, Deputy Managing Director for the Office of Transportation and Infrastructure Systems. Clarina, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you for having me.
It's being pitched as 10 miles of roads, 15 Philadelphia neighborhoods, and I presume the free means free of motor vehicles.
Free of motor vehicles. We are very excited to have this initial Philly Free Street event on Saturday, September 24th, where we're going to have 10 miles of streets and roadway that will be clear of vehicles so that people can come out and walk, run, jog, play, and enjoy our environment. Philadelphia has had an open streets event since 1994 when Martin Luther King Drive, which was then called West River Drive, was closed on the weekends to vehicles so that people could come out and enjoy the roadway. This time it's going to go on residential streets, a business corridor, river to river on South Street, as well as along Schuylkill River Trail, and then up through on Martin Luther King Drive to the Falls Bridge.
Tell us about the organized events for the period. I understand it's from 8 in the morning to 1.
There are over 60 partners who will be out there with Zumba classes, tango lessons, trampoline fitness. Whatever you'd like to do and whatever you'd like to learn about and to try, there'll be opportunities to do all of that. The reason why we're having the event is because there's an important intersection between health and active transportation. Philadelphia has the highest rates of cardiovascular disease and hypertension and diabetes amongst the largest cities in this country. So we want to do our part to engage people, to encourage more active transportation. That means more walking, more biking to get about, to improve our city's lot with regard to health.
And I understand toward that end, it's happening from the top down with Mayor Kenney leading a walk.
That's right. Mayor Kenney will be leading a power walk at 9 a.m. starting at 2nd and South Street. He is a big fan of walking. In fact, he's a very fast walker. So we hope people will come out and join him at that time for a quick, brisk walk.
If this succeeds, are there more dates on the calendar for succeeding walks?
I think that we're going to see more of these events. The mayor is very excited about it. This was a charge that he gave in November to have an expanded open streets event compared to what we do on our drive. So I expect that in 2017, we'll be back at this again.
I'll let you go, but where can we see you out there?
I will be out the entire route. I will be walking and biking at different locations. I want to see everything. I want to enjoy everything. I may not do that trampoline, but you may see me in a Zumba class.
Okay, great. Thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you. Hope you can make it and join us, please.
Clarina Tolson is Deputy Managing Director for the Office of Transportation and Infrastructure Systems. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Binyakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Our news director is Eugene Son. At the controls this week, Al Banks, Diana Martinez, and Adam Staniszewski. Sandra Clark is Vice President of News and Civic Dialogue. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight. Yeah,